You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It's a football Wednesday, and Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura hanging out with you here, and want to tell you that if you're shopping for a Browns fan this holiday season, shop the biggest selection of apparel and merchandise at the Cleveland Browns Team Shop this holiday season. Visit the Team Shop at First Energy Stadium. It's open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. 7 days a week, or shop online or on the Browns mobile app. You can go to shop.clevelandbrowns.com. And joining us now is our good buddy from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Does a great job of covering the Browns for that newspaper. Check out his great work there if you're not a subscriber online. Scott Petrak. Scott, the first place, I guess, is what should, if you had to prioritize some things you want to see when we're down to these games being meaningless for both teams, these last two, but let's start with this Jets game. Is there some specific area that you need or want to see first?
Yeah, it's the young guys for sure. You know, it's whether or not Jason Pinkston, if he gets to play left guard again, does he look like he can be a long-term answer at that position, so that's somewhere you don't have to go get next year? It's Edwin Baker, like you guys were talking about. Can he show enough in two games to be in the mix at some place next year? You know, we're going to see probably Marquise Gray a lot at tight end if Jordan Cameron doesn't go. Got all the physical tools in the world, making the position change. Does he flash? So it's a lot of those kind of things. And then I'd like to see what kind of numbers Josh Gordon can finish with, because obviously he's already got the record, but it'd be so impressive. Let's say he gets to, you know, 1750 in 14 games. That'd be remarkable.
Yeah, I definitely want to see him stuff the stat sheets a little bit in these final two games. Do you think there's anything we can see from Devon Bess over these final two games that would convince you that he's a guy who should be back and playing a meaningful role for the Browns?
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, if he had big games, you know, if he has 7 and 8 catches for 75 and 80 yards, and you think, okay, maybe the light came on or whatever it is. The disturbing thing about him is, you know, he signed that extension, so he's not going anywhere, I don't think, because you'd lose a lot of money, and he's a good locker room guy. So I expect him to be here, and then the earliest you'd see him get cut is at the end of training camp if he showed maybe he's just got nothing left, and then obviously be a bad sign if that were the case. But, you know, you mentioned him. Talk about if you list the disappointments for the season, he's got to be right up at the top, because you thought he was going to convert all these third downs and keep the chains moving. And, you know, the biggest memories you have of him this year, the drops and then the muff punt in Kansas City.
Yeah, and that, when it was all said and done, I mean, we got a lot of these on a list, but I think when you go to points where things that left this team short of its chances to even be competitive, you start there, that you couldn't find a guy. And we thought this would be a guy. We had our questions about Greg Little.
Yep.
We were pretty sure Devon Bess brought you reliability in hands and reliability in just getting open and making plays. He got open, but the hands issue, and I don't know where that came from. I've asked a lot of people around the league who have followed his career. They say, though, after a certain point, or at a certain point, a player just does get to that as a receiver. It can happen, and when it does, it's like a Niagara Falls. I mean,
right.
It's just all just comes down.
Yeah, it would be a big blow if he's never able to do anything here. I mean, if this is the best it gets for Devon Bess, and it's a bad trade and a worse extension. But you're right. You know, they needed that third piece on that offense. You know, we talk all we can about the lack of a running game, but you had Gordon and Cameron. You needed that third piece, and he was supposed to be it. And, you know, I think he's limited in what he can do from a route running. You know, we see a lot of the shallow crosses and the outs, which is fine. You know, I mean, Wes Welker runs those kind of same routes. But when you don't catch the ball and you can't, you know, you're not trusted by your quarterbacks, it really limits what you can do. And that just adds to the list of, okay, where do the Browns have to get better next year? And obviously that's one of them. And it's a surprise because we saw him in training camp, and he looked good in training camp.
Yeah.
I mean, he stood out, and all the quarterbacks raved about him. And there's there's nothing let on that he wouldn't be the guy that we expected him to be until the game started.
Very true, and that has been one of the biggest disappointments. We actually did talk about it yesterday. This is a guy who's caught over 65% of his targets for his career, under 50% this year, which has been massively disappointing. Defensively, over these final two games, I'd like to see Barkevius Mingo, Paul Kruger, Jabal Sheard continue to get to the quarterback, rack up sacks, because I don't think, you know, hurries are great and they're stats that people can talk about, but you want to get there and make the plays. Two interesting matchups with the Jets and the Steelers the final 2 weeks. What are your expectations for that group at outside linebacker?
Yeah, I thought we saw progress with Mingo starting in Jacksonville. He had been off the radar. We hadn't seen much of him since that hot start he got off to. Showed up in Jacksonville with some hurries, batted balls, had the sack in New England. You know, showed up a little bit in Chicago. So I'd like to see him finish strong because I think that's huge. And, you know, Ray Horton talked about that group and thinks it'll make a significant jump from this year to next year. New system for Sheard and Mingo. You know, they were played defensive end, now they're playing outside linebacker. So he expects him to take big jumps. But you'd like to see a strong finish, except especially for Mingo. Miss the start, you know, miss that opener. Isn't the biggest guy in the world. You'd like to see him make it through the whole season healthy with some production. But, you know, I think I heard you guys the other day, what's disappointing from that group is in these fourth quarter meltdowns, collapses, whatever you want to call it by the defense, we've not seen those guys win enough one-on-one to affect the outcome of the game.
Yep.
And that's what you expected to get out, you know, to get from those guys. And Sheard came close, you know, Sunday against Chicago on the Jeffrey touchdown. He's half a step away on the McFadden interference. He's a half step away from a safety in the end zone, but those half steps wind up costing the game.
We're visiting with Scott Petrak. He covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. And that brings up the point of this difference-maker conversation we've had as well, is what is needed in this offseason. And I think while it's been good and somewhat effective that Ray Horton has been able to scheme this defense to some sacks and pressure, not having enough of those individuals who win one-on-one battles, who turn, you know, who change games just by being there, who force coordinators to change their offensive coordinators to change their game plans because of what that guy can do. That guy doesn't really exist for the Browns. They've got to have him. And, you know, you hoped it would be Paul Kruger.
Right.
It could still be Barkevious Mingo. Jabal Sheard has potential to continue to develop as an outside linebacker converting from a defensive end, but he's not there now.
Right. No, I mean, I think Sheard's a legitimate NFL starter. I think you put him on any team in the league, he's a starter, he's a good player. And the same with Kruger. I mean, Kruger is an above-average player. But you're right, you need that Alden Smith kind of guy. And, you know, maybe we put high expectations on these rookies and a top-10 pick. But that's what you were dreaming about when you thought Barkevious Mingo. You bring him in on third down, and you tell him to go get the quarterback. And maybe it's because of the injuries. You know, Sheard had the injury and Groves had the injury, that you couldn't play Mingo just in that role. He was out there a lot. He played a lot of snaps. And maybe it took something out of him, but I think that's what the Browns envisioned, was you put that guy on the edge, and he just goes, gets a quarterback, and it's 10, 12 sacks, where he makes a huge difference, and he makes a huge difference on third down, but that's where the Browns have struggled. He hasn't shown up in those spots. And the good thing is he's young, and he's only a rookie, so you think that maybe that'll come. But if it doesn't, that's a problem, because I don't see how they invest a whole lot of other resources in that position in this offseason. Right? I mean, they got three guys lined up. Right.
Right.
It has to come from these guys. And the guy with the best chance of taking that step is Mingo.
Certainly. Are you now at the point, Scott, that you would like to see these last two games be about, you know, ultimately wins and losses or about, you know, the draft for next year? Where are you at on that?
I think I disagree with you, Nathan, on this one. I'd like to see him win at least one of these two games.
Okay with the win.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to match last year's, if not exceed, the win total. You know, I think it's a bad sign or a bad message for these guys to go in the offseason having lost seven in a row. Any of the momentum we thought the team had built up would be gone. It would feel like every other year. You know, every year you can point to a couple things, a couple bright spots. Probably none as bright as Josh Gordon's season this year, but it would be lost. Everybody would forget about it. It'd be all the losses to finish the season. And I think it's important for Chud in his first year and a lot of these young guys to have a positive vibe going into that offseason, that all the progress they thought they made actually meant something and there was some progress there.
This could be an offseason of we know it's going to be an offseason of change. We know players, there's going to be turnover again. It's about a third of every roster every year that gets turned over, no matter what. But we expect change. Could there be some change within the coaching staff? And I bring this up, and we brought this up a little earlier in the week, about the potential for Ray Horton as a defensive coordinator to get some sniffs as a head coach again, as he did last year. This is an interesting item. Monday morning quarterback Peter King, and I'm going to quote directly from him. He said, in response to last winter's embarrassment, when 14 consecutive white head coach and GMs were hired, the NFL impaneled 8 former coaches and general managers, one of them being Bill Polian, Tony Dungy's on this, Ron Wolf, John Madden. They're part of this group. So they assembled what was described as an inclusive list of coaching and GM candidates with special emphasis on minorities. The Career Development Advisory Panel's list is out, and apparently these are the names that are on it. Ray Horton's one of them. The others, Lovie Smith, Mel Tucker, Jim Caldwell, Todd Bowles, among those. There are more names. I'm not going to recite them all. But Ray's on this list, and I guess for teams that actually have a head coaching opening that would only be Houston right now, mm-hmm. they get access to this. What do you think of the possibility of Horton getting what could be one of 10 head coaching jobs?
Yeah, I think it's a definite possibility. I think he came close last year. He came close to some degree here. I mean, I know that Jimmy Haslam and Joe Banner loved him, or else he wouldn't be here as coordinator when they interviewed him for the head coaching job. You know, I think he's got the personality to be a head coach. I know the players love playing for him. I think he's going to interview well wherever he goes. You know, he gives a lot of stats. I think some owners appreciate that when you're interviewing a guy and he can recite stuff and he's got kind
sure.
of that, I don't know if it's photographic memory, but he can recall a lot of stuff instantly.
Like him.
So, yeah,
like
exactly. Him. That's exactly right. So I think there's a good chance that he lands a job. Now, I don't know how much the defense's decline matters. I think at the end of the year you can look back and they're going to have a top 10 defense, and that's going to look good on his resume. So I think it's a chance that he gets a job, and I think it'd be a big loss because the Browns are just learning that system. I think they showed improvement. The numbers show it.
Sure.
That they showed improvement. The players like him. So I think that'd be a big blow, and that's probably the most likely big change you'd see on that coaching staff. You know, I expect Norv to be here, which would be good because it'll be in the second season. And Scott Turner, a lot of those other positional coaches I would expect to be back. But it would be a big loss if Ray Horton weren't here again.
Yeah, I certainly would like to see him back. One thing we want to talk about, we're going to get into it in more detail with our opinions later on the show, but I thought it'd be interesting to ask you about it. Todd McShay released his first mock draft of the season, and he has the Cleveland Browns with their first pick taking Derek Carr, quarterback out of Fresno State, and then with his second pick, he has them taking the wide receiver Matthews out of Vanderbilt, Jordan Matthews, and trying to improve the offense, obviously. That's kind of the direction I think a lot of people think, maybe a receiver and a quarterback in the first round. What's your take on that, Scott?
Yeah, those would be my two positions that I would cite as one and two. You know, quarterback, and I haven't seen a ton of these college quarterbacks. I did see Carr play a little bit. He's my kind of quarterback, big guy, stands in the pocket, throws a good ball. That's always the first thing I look for. You know, I don't know if he's got him drafting five, I guess. You know, that's high. It might be high for him, but if that's where you got to get him, you got to get him. And then I think they need another receiver to match up with Josh Gordon. And all of a sudden, you could have the potential of a big-time offense. If you get the guy in the first round who's legit, opposite Gordon, with Cameron, you're going to draft a running back in the second, third, fourth round.
Could be back.
Right? Yeah. So then all of a sudden, you have a lot of weapons, and that should help, whether it's Hoyer, Campbell, or Carr, whoever the quarterback is, that should help the transition for, you know, whoever's behind center. So I think that mock draft makes a lot of sense right now.
Good stuff. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it, Scott.
Anytime, Phyllis.
Scott Petrak from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram joining us, as he regularly does here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up for you. We're going to go inside the locker room with Gary Barnage. He will be sitting down with Jameer Howerton in a little bit. Vic and Nathan, ESPN 850 WKNR.